Awesome. Well, good morning. And as Justin said, welcome. Hopefully you have made yourself right at home. This morning, I'm celebrating something, not just Erica's story, but then also something that you probably didn't notice that took place just a few seconds ago. Some of you recognize the song that we sang just a moment ago, and you recognize the verses, but then it came to the chorus, and you're like, I don't remember that part of the song. Our band actually wrote that, and one of the things that I'm really excited about is just to see the band continuing to grow and develop and beginning to write now. So would you guys just celebrate our band and what they do every week? Really, really cool. And for those of you who are with us for the first time, let me just take a second to introduce myself. My name is Chris, and I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And you have walked into a conversation called Chemistry. And we're really, really excited about this. We kicked it off last week. If you weren't able to be with us last week, we're looking at the foundations of a lasting, powerful relationship. Not just a lasting relationship. Just because a relationship lasts doesn't necessarily mean that it's good, but a lasting, powerful, beautiful relationship. And as we began this conversation last week, we started off by looking at this reality that for so many of us, if not all of us, we have very little to work from when it comes to having a good relationship. We have almost no good models. And even when you come to the scriptures, it seems that when it comes to this area of love, rather than Jesus pointing us to different things and rather than God pointing us to different people, he establishes one model. He says, listen, I'm going to teach you about love, but I'm not going to teach you about it by giving you this example or that example. I'm going to teach you about it by pointing you to Christ. He says, if you'll pay attention to Christ, if you'll pay attention to Christ, you're going to know how to love. And as we're coming together, that's what we want. We want to be able to love, whether it's friendships, whether it's marriage, whether it's dating, we want to be able to love. We want to be able to love well. And so as we're beginning this journey together, and as we began last week, we're looking at and saying, okay, if Christ is our model, if God's going to be our model, then let's begin to break this down. And that's what we want to begin to do today. We want to begin to break this down. Okay, how do we break this down? Let's look at, okay, what are the fundamentals that make it possible for you and I to have a lasting, powerful relationship with Christ? And then as we see those fundamentals, then how do we bring those fundamentals into our relationships with the people around us, whether it be coworkers, friends, whether it be the way that we're pursuing love? And some of you are in this place where you're trying to figure out, okay, who does God have someone for me to spend my life with? And what does that look like? And how do I pursue that? Or whether it's beginning to engage in loving someone and loving someone well, or whether it's that you're in a committed relationship and looking at, okay, how do I love my wife better? How do I love my husband better? For all of us, the great thing about the model of Christ is that it speaks to all of us no matter where we are. And so we want to break this down and look at, okay, what are the fundamentals of how he loves us? And that's where we want to begin today. What is it that makes it possible for you to have a lasting, powerful relationship with Christ? What is it that makes it possible? And for so many of us, as we come together, some of you are seeking, you're trying to figure out, I don't know really whether I can. You talk about having a relationship with Christ, I'm not really sure. But for a lot of us in this room, we think that we can. We believe that we can. We believe that we do have a lasting, meaningful, good, beautiful relationship with Christ. What makes that possible? Usually when we ask the question, the first thing that we come to is the cross. And we talk about Jesus and how he gives his life for us on the cross. And that's very, very true. But what I want to do today is I want to not just look at the cross as a moment, but to look at the cross a little bit deeper, to look maybe a little bit behind the story of the cross, because I think there's more to it than just a moment. And when we come to the fundamentals of, okay, what is fundamentally behind God's love for us, upholding God's love for us, that we know that we can have a meaningful, lasting relationship, I think it's more than just a moment. I think it's more than just in this moment, he loved you really, really well, and so now you can trust him. Now you can trust his love. I think it's more than that. I think the scriptures are trying to teach us that it's more than that. And so what I want to do today, I just want to look at a little bit of the backstory of the cross, take you to a little bit of the backstory of the cross, because I think you see something in the backstory that's really, really important and speaks to this fundamental element of how God loves us. Let me take you back to the beginning of this story, because I think in order to see the backstory of the cross, you really have to go back to the beginning, because from the very beginning of our story with God, he talks about the cross. I'm not sure if you know this or not, if you're familiar with this or not, but from the very moment that Adam and Eve break their relationship with the one who created them, with the one who loved them, God's already beginning to talk about what he's going to one day do. Let me take you to the passage. It's really easy to miss it because it's painted in a picture. You find it in Genesis chapter 3, verse 14. It says this. It says, "Then the Lord God said to the serpent," he's talking to the serpent, and as you read through the story, you see that Satan is using the serpent to be able to lie to Eve and to be able to plant this lie that, listen, God's holding out on you. And so God's speaking to him, and as he's speaking to him, he's speaking to Satan. He says, "Because you've done this, you are cursed more than all the animals, domestic and wild. You will crawl on your belly, groveling in the dust as long as you live." He says, and listen carefully to this, because this is where he begins to talk about the future. He says, "And I will cause hostility between you and the woman, and between your offspring and her offspring. He will strike your head, and you will strike his heel." God's interacting with Satan as Adam and Eve have just stepped out of this relationship with him. And it's this incredibly intense moment, because as Adam and Eve decide that, hey, listen, you know what? I do think God's holding out on us. I think that we can do this better on our own. All of a sudden, God steps back into the picture and they're confronted with what's just happened. And in the moment, they think that God's done with them. Some of you think that today. You think God's done with you. When you come to the scriptures, you find that couldn't be further from the truth. But they think that. They think God's done with me. What's going to happen now? And God begins to talk to them about the impact of their sin, the consequences of their sin. He says, listen, you know what? It's going to cause a lot of really destructive things. And then he turns and he begins to have this conversation with the one who deceived them. And he says to the one who deceived him, he says, listen, you know, you think that you've won. You think that you've won today because you convinced them that I was against them. You think that you've won because you've broken this relationship. He says, but I want you to know something. There's someone coming. There's someone coming who's going to rescue them. And he paints in this picture. He says, you will strike his heel. He says, you're going to try to destroy him too. You're going to try to defeat him too. You're going to try to continue to destroy what I've created. And he says, and you're going to be able to strike his heel, to cause pain. It may even look like you've won in the moment, but he's going to crush you. He's going to crush you. There's a rescuer coming who's going to crush you and bring them back to me. This is the very beginning of the story. What is he talking about? He's talking about what we will one day see happen on that cross, where Jesus conquers sin and death, where Jesus crushes the one who would deceive us and tell us that God is against us and not for us. And from the beginning, he makes this promise. He says, listen, there's going to be a rescuer. There's going to be a rescuer. There's one who's coming who's going to crush the deceiver. But it doesn't happen immediately. As a matter of fact, as the years go on, there are multiple prophets who speak to it, but it still continues to not happen. The Redeemer doesn't arrive, and the rescuer doesn't arrive. And you hear prophets like Isaiah talking about it. In Isaiah 53, it talks all about Christ, one of the most beautiful passages that points forward to the cross. And literally years and years and years earlier, Isaiah is writing about what's going to one day eventually happen to Jesus Christ. I'll just read to you the end of Isaiah 53. It says, "But it was the Lord's good plan to crush him and cause him grief." He's talking about how Jesus was going to take our sin on him to be able to pay for what we had done to separate ourselves from God. It says, "Yet when his life is made an offering for sin, he will have many descendants," me and you. "He will enjoy a long life, and the Lord's good plan will prosper in his hands." And it's talking about this rescuer. This rescuer is coming, and God makes this promise that the rescuer is coming. But as the years go on, there's this sense that maybe God isn't who he says he is, that maybe God isn't going to do what he said he was going to do, that maybe God isn't faithful. As a matter of fact, I think when you look at the story of Jesus Christ and you look at the religious leaders of his time, there seems to be an overwhelming sense amongst the religious leaders that Jesus walks amongst that, listen, the rescuer is not coming. We might as well just make the most of what we have. And so they've just kind of embraced the Roman idea, and they're making the most of the position that they have inside of culture. They're not really looking for a rescuer. And even when they have the chance to see it, they're afraid that he'll take from them the position that they have, and so they end up doing what they can to destroy him. There's a sense that maybe God isn't who he says that he is. Until Jesus Christ goes to that cross. In 1 Corinthians, Paul says it this way, chapter 5, verse 21, it says, "For God made Christ, who never sinned, to be the offering for our sins, so that we could be made right with God through Christ, until one day Jesus goes to that cross." And he's broken so that we could be made whole. And oftentimes when we talk about, okay, what is the foundation for God's love for us? We point to the cross, but the cross is about more than just a moment of love. It's an entire story of love. There's all this behind it. And when you begin to look at it for what it is, you see that the scriptures are calling us to trust God, not just because Christ in a moment loved us, but because God has demonstrated over the course of the story an unbelievable faithfulness to be able to do what he says he's going to do. There's a reason why we're given the promise at the beginning. Why? Because he wants us to be able to see. Listen, I want you to be able to see the character of God. And here's the character of God. When he says he'll do it, he'll do it. And it may not be on your timeline. You may think it should happen sooner. It may actually take so long that you think, man, this is never going to happen at all. But he says, no. You can look at the character of God. Pay attention to the character of God. Because when God says that he's going to do it, he does it. At the very foundation of our relationship with God is not just a moment. The moment is crucial, but it's about more than just a moment. It's the very character of God. He says, you know why you can trust me? Because I do the right thing no matter what it costs. And I do what I said I was going to do no matter what I have to endure for that to happen. At the core of our relationship with Christ is character. And I think the scriptures are not just calling us to recognize God's character. I think they're calling us to be able to recognize that we can, that the reason we can have a lasting, loving, powerful relationship is God's character. The reason why you have hope for the future is God's character. Because you trust his promises. Why do you trust his promises? We trust his promises because he's been faithful to keep his promises over and over and over and over again throughout the story. So I know when he says that he's going to continue to love me, he's going to continue to love me. When he says that, no, listen, I've got a place that I've prepared for you, that I trust him, that he's got a place that he's prepared for me. Why? Because of his character. At the heart of a lasting, powerful, loving relationship is character. The scriptures are calling us to trust this about God. They're calling us to be able to realize this about our relationship with him. And then as we look at that, one of the things that I think that you see is that as Christ is modeling what it looks like to have a powerful, lasting, loving relationship, he's revealing to us that at the core of a relationship like that is character. And the really interesting thing is this, right? God doesn't just teach us that a lasting relationship requires character from one person's perspective. He actually teaches us that character is necessary for everyone involved in the relationship. Because not only does God come to us and say, look at my character, look at how I've been faithful, look at how I've carried through, but then he also comes to us and says, you know what the problem is with you and me? You know why we can't have a lasting relationship? You don't have character. So I'm going to do something about that. You see, Jesus Christ isn't just about how he took on our sin to be able to pay for it. There's a whole other side to that story. In a couple of weeks, we're going to dig into this really, really deep, but there's a whole other side of that story where God not only comes to be able to take your sin from you, but then God also says when you place your faith in him, that he is going to give you the righteousness of Christ, that he is going to credit you with the character of Christ, and that you are going to be made new from the inside out. Jesus talks about this as being born again. He says no one can enter the kingdom of heaven unless they're born again. Why is that important? Because lasting, loving, powerful relationships require character, and you don't have character until you receive the character of Christ through being born again. And God's revealing to us this beautiful truth about relationships, that at the core of them is character. And if you want a lasting, powerful, beautiful, good relationship, you must have character. Now, as we talk about relationships, I know that it's not necessarily, or we don't usually look at character as romantic. And I know that, you know, as we come into this and we're looking at, okay, how do we find a beautiful relationship? It's not necessarily the first thing you expect to hear us talk about, this idea of character. No one gets really excited about character. You don't usually hear someone talking, you know what, he just has a really tight character. I love his character. I love her. It's not really a part of how we look at relationships. Maybe why we're not very good at them. As a matter of fact, inside of our culture, it seems that we've almost made it romantic to not have character. That what's attractive is a lack of character. But God steps in and says, listen. Stop paying attention to all these other models. Listen, come here. Pay attention to my son. He'll teach you. He'll teach you about love. You start paying attention to your relationship with Christ, you'll see that at the core of it, one of the foundational elements of your relationship with Christ is character. His character demonstrated, and the character that he gave his life to give you. Character. If we want to have lasting, powerful, meaningful relationships, they will be built on character. Our ability to be able to do what's right, even when it costs us. Our ability to follow through on what we said that we were going to do, that when we step into someone else's life and we say, no, listen, this is what I'm going to do, that we actually do it. A our ability to be able to endure through those moments when it seems like everything's fallen apart. It's built on character. That means for those of us who are seeking and looking at, okay, God, what do you... It's crucial that we begin to value and look for character. For those of us who are in relationships, it's crucial for us to begin to realize, and we're going to talk through different elements of this. One of the ones that we're going to talk through is intimacy, and the foundational element of intimacy. One of the things that you need to understand is that intimacy is drastically linked to character. And it doesn't matter what type of relationship you're talking about. I talk about this with gossip all the time. If you're a gossip, you're demonstrating no character. You know what happens when you do that? The intimacy that you have with the people around you decreases. Why? I'm not going to tell you something. I can't trust you. You have no character. When character decreases, intimacy decreases. For some of you in your relationship, you're in relationships where struggling in intimacy, and the reason why is because there's no character. The foundation is character. So what do we do with that? Because character is one of those interesting things. It seems like it's just kind of out there. I mean, how do I build character? Is there like a gym for this? What does that look like? And I think it starts with the transformation of our minds. And Romans talks about how our growth in this relationship with Christ, a lot of it is in the transformation of our minds. And I think a big part of it starts with the transformation of our minds, changing what it is that we value, what it is that we find attractive, what it is that we're attracted to. And I know for some of us, you think, wait a second, it just seems like I'm always attracted to the wrong guys. I'm always attracted to the wrong girls. Your attraction can be changed. As a matter of fact, when you begin to value something yourself, and the truth is you can't work on anyone else's character, you have to work on your own character first. But when you begin to change the way you value something in yourself, and you begin to work on something yourself, it will change what it is that you're attracted to. So if you spend an incredible amount of time looking at and focusing on your character and how you're developing and building your character, how your ability to be able to endure, even when the circumstances are difficult, your ability to be able to make the right decision, even when you don't feel like making the right decision, your ability to be able to overcome your appetites when they want to draw you away from the things that you've committed to. When you begin to work on those, when you begin to build those in your own life, what you're going to find is that will change how you see the people around you. It will change what it is that you're attracted to in the people around you. We all know this. If you're passionate about fashion, your fashion, you're going to be attracted to people who are passionate about fashion most of the time. There may be some exceptions, but if you're passionate about physical, like taking care of your physical body, right, and working out, you're going to be attracted to that in other people. Why? Because what you're passionate about, you become attracted to. What you're working towards, you become attracted to in the people around you. The same thing is true about character. If you want to change what it is that you're attracted to as far as character is concerned, you begin to work on it yourself and you will become more attracted to it in others. It begins when we begin to change what it is that we value and that, okay, listen, when I look at this, I understand that the foundation of our future is character. And so therefore, I'm going to begin to work on it myself. As I'm working on it myself, I'm going to become more attracted to it in the lives of the people around me. This also changes it for those of you who are inside of marriages. And some of you are inside of marriages right now, and you're in a committed relationship, and you're like, man, there's no character. As we're having this conversation, you're becoming overwhelmed because you're looking at it saying, no, you're right. There's no character either in your life or in the person that you're married to life. This isn't hopeless because, again, as you come into this, one of the beautiful things, Jesus, through Paul, is talking to couples who are in an interesting situation. in one of the passages in the New Testament where Jesus is coming to them and he's saying, listen, for some of you, you're married and one of you has come to know Christ inside that relationship, but the other person still doesn't trust Christ. He says, so here's how I want you to operate. And he begins to speak to the person who knows Christ. He says, listen, if you will follow Christ inside this relationship, I love the way he phrases it. He says, you have the ability to make the truth about God attractive. That's a beautiful thing. He says, listen, you have the ability to make the truth about God attractive. You know what happens when you become passionate about your character? You begin to, and character can be, not always, it doesn't always happen this way, but character has a tendency to become contagious. And so as you begin to tackle and work on character yourself, all of a sudden that has the ability to make the truth about God attractive in the person that you're with. But begin to become passionate about it as well. It's not a promise. I'm not promising you that. But I'm telling you that Paul says that this is a possibility. And so embrace it and step into it. Character. You have to change what you value about character. You have to give up some lies about character. Especially for those of you who are seeking. You're looking at who is it. There's this unbelievable lie in our culture about character. There's this lie that emotion and emotional attachment can trump character flaws. And so you're engaging in a relationship with someone, you're coming to know someone, and you're seeing all these character flaws. In other words, they commit to things, but they don't follow through on them. And if things get tough, they seem to give up. There's all these character flaws, but they love you really well because they're really emotionally passionate about you. You talk to their friends, and their friends say things like, man, it's amazing. When they're around you, they're just a different person. If you have that conversation with the friends of the person you're dating, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. You think it, but we have the ability to lie to ourselves really, really well. So you know what we tell each, you know what we tell ourselves? Yeah, I have the ability to do that. That's just how attractive I am. And we lie to ourselves. We tell ourselves, no. Their emotional passion for me will trump their character flaws. And I'll never actually have to impact, or I'll actually never be impacted by those flaws. It's a lie. And you will. You will. Because life at some point will demand character. And sometimes you'll be able to see it coming and sometimes you won't. One of the most devastating things for Anna and I, as we've been exposed to the special needs world, is that for most of the parents that we know who have children with Down syndrome, and for those of you who don't know, my middle child has Down syndrome, for most of them, as they encountered the unbelievably life-shattering, life-twisting impact of having a special needs child, their relationship crumbled. Why? Because life demanded character. Sometimes you can see it coming, sometimes you can't. But life will always demand it at some point. You have to value character. That means that you begin to work on it yourself. You begin to look for it in those around you. Well, how do I work on it myself? I think there's two things. I want to just mention one briefly, and then we'll go on to the next one. But the first one is that you surround yourself with people of character. If you want to work on your character, you need to surround yourself with people of character. If you're surrounding yourself with people who have no character, your character is going to be awful. We talk about dinner groups all the time here at Hoboken Grace. It's about surrounding yourself with other people who are passionate about character. And it's not just being in a dinner group. You have to be honest with your dinner group. If you're not being honest with your dinner group, it's not going to help you at all with character. But be able to step into that setting and be able to be honest with the people around you about what it is that you're battling, what it is that you're struggling through, to be able to surround yourself with people who are passionate about character as well so that you can grow together. And we talk about that one a lot, so I'm just going to mention that one really quickly, but make sure you do not underestimate the importance of it. And then secondly, you have to begin to interact with character development moments differently. I want to take you to two passages. The first one is found in the book of James. These passages seem really, really daunting when you read them outside of this context, but when you understand what God is doing, when you understand the importance of character, these passages change a little bit. The first one is found in James chapter 1, beginning in verse 2. It says, "Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy." Why would I consider trouble an opportunity for great joy? He says, "For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow, for when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing." Romans chapter 5 talks about this very same thing. And so Romans chapter 5, beginning in verse 3, it says, "We can rejoice too when we run into problems and trials, for we know that they help us develop endurance." And endurance develops what? Strength of character. And character strengthens our confident hope of salvation. And this hope will not lead to disappointment. Character. In both of these books, James and Paul, they're writing to the church and saying, listen. Stop looking at these situations where things are difficult. Stop looking at these testing situations. Stop looking at these difficult situations as situations to be avoided or things to get upset about. He says, no. Take great joy in those situations. Why? Because these situations develop character. And why do we need character? Because all of the relationships around us are dependent on character. Our relationship with God, our relationship with each other, our ability to love is dependent on character. Stop running from them and start embracing them. My professor talked about this in his own life. He was telling us a story about how every single day, and we lived in this little town just outside of Scranton called Clark Summit. In this little town, there was one street that every single afternoon would have a traffic jam. There's like 50 people who live in this town. There's no reason that you should ever have a traffic jam. But for some weird reason, this street, and you could get stuck on this street for a long time. And my professor would tell the stories. He said, I used to drive home down this road every day, and I'd get stuck in this stupid traffic jam, and I'd get so angry. And I'm saying things in my head about the people around me, and it must be their terrible driving that leads to this traffic jam, because there's no reason why this should ever happen. It's not like the road narrows or something that makes sense. It was weird. And he said, so I started to look at my life and I realized that, man, this anger was getting out of control and it was impacting how I was arriving home and how I was treating my family. And he said, so I just decided that I was going to take a different route home. And I went to God and I apologized for the fact that I was losing my temper and I told him that from now on I was going to take a different route home. He said, but it was weird. Because I heard God, I actually heard God talk to me about this in my heart. And God said, no. Take that route home. This is making me angry. Like, there's a lot of stupid people on that road. I'm not going down that road. And God said, no. I want you to go down that road. And I want you to learn how to be able to endure the traffic jam without getting angry. Stop running from the test. Stop running from the obstacle and embrace it. Embrace it. We have all sorts of opportunities for character development in our lives. That boss you hate is a great opportunity for character development. That roommate that's driving you insane, what if it's not a mistake that they're in your life? What if, and I know you believe God put them there to punish you, but what if God didn't put them there to punish you? What if he knew that your ability to love in the future would be dependent upon your character, and he wanted to develop your character so that you could love the way he loves? Over the next few weeks, we're going to be diving into some really beautiful things about how God loves us and how these things are all intertwined. But it starts with character. Value it. Understand the beautiful value in it and your relationship with him. Value it in your own life. Surround yourself with people of character. Embrace those opportunities. And may we become individuals who love well because we are individuals of character. Will you pray with me? Father, as we look at the beautiful way that you've loved us, how you have been so consistently faithful over time, and how you demonstrate this throughout your word, Father, I pray that it would stir within us a deep appreciation for your character. I pray that the reality of our future, the stability of our future, I pray that we would realize how that is so intimately connected to your character. Again, that we would just have this deep appreciation of your character. I pray that we would see how that is fundamental, instrumental in the way that we're going to be able to love those around us, and that we would begin to not run from those moments where we have opportunities to develop character, but that we would embrace them. At those moments in life that demand character would not catch us off guard. At those moments in love that demand character, that we would not fail in them, but that we would thrive in them. And may we love as you love. In Jesus' name, amen.